The CSAT score was higher than a human agent on a comparable task. And that was also partially to do with the fact that in those vulnerable states, I think people actually prefer to speak to a non-human, right? Because that vulnerability and exposure, it hits you, I think, a bit less when you don't have that emotional reaction to the person. But, you know, the thing you're talking to is, in fact, automated.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to another enlightening episode of Deep Learning with Poly AI, the only podcast with a CEO wearing a suit and a host wearing an athleisure hoodie. So here we are back with another episode. Nicola, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me and for the shaming. Got to see
Clark. You're looking dapper. I know it's all good things. We can't talk about it right now, but it's all good things. All good things.
Great things.
Fascinating stuff. I wanted to, even though you do look all business today, I want to take a higher level look.
We need to take this off.
No, definitely. No, I just love it because this is, I think, the first time that you've rocked a suit coat on Deep Learning here. I really appreciate it. I obviously dressed up for you too. This is fairly clean. Yes. I wanted to take a look. We talk a lot about technology, what we do, the general state of AI, how it's applied in business, and that's all really important, well and good. But this is truly having some severe cultural impacts. And I say severe, it sounds probably a little more harsh than I intend, in both the positive and what the potential is for allowing people to engage, with businesses, but with each other, with resources, in a way that's never been possible before. And part of the overarching goal, I think, that's been pretty galvanized in this big AI mission is the way that we get people to adopt this technology is to just make it as human as possible. Most business applications have some sort of humanization, whether it's bringing in LLMs or having some sort of engaging aspect of the tech itself. So I want to take today's episode and talk a little bit more about that, explore it, talk in the philosophical, more theoretical space as opposed to the nuts and bolts, get your opinion as someone who knows academically this world inside and out and how what you're seeing with regards to your friends and neighbors and coworkers with regards to them utilizing this technology and how it's transforming them as individuals. So first of all, I wanted to talk a little bit about the concept of humanizing. And I'm going to start with our product. So we obviously make the world's best customer-led voice assistants for enterprise contact centers, right? What would you say is the average amount of time it takes for the average caller who rings into one of our clients and gets met with a Poly AI bot with no disclosure at the front identifying itself as a bot? How long does it take before they become aware that they're interacting with an automated system?
Some people never do, right? I would say that there's probably about a solid quarter to a third of the people who go through an interaction just not really thinking about whether it's a human or not. And they might realize at the end, or they might have something that they might go back and forth. Let me play with something.
Okay.
Hurry.
Hi, thanks for calling Bella Italia Telford. How can I help you today? Book a table. When would you like to come in? Today. What time do you think you'll be here?
6:15.
And how many people?
7.
Let me just have a look at what space we have. It looks like we've got nothing within 2 hours of 6:15 p.m.
Is there another day or time I can check to you?
No, I'm so sorry. I thought I was talking to a robot, so I've been really rude. I do apologize. Sorry. No, that's all good. That's too much.
That is insane. So this is a classic counterexample of this person thought they were talking to a bot through the course of the conversation. They actually converted and thought that they were talking to a person. That's pretty funny. How many of those do we have?
It is funny. Well, these are less frequent, but I think they're really interesting.
Sure.
Well, they get to a point where they're like, okay, like it's a robot. It's not. When they think it's a robot, they speak in this unnatural way. It's like, hey, book a table. 3 people tomorrow,
right?
Like they want to make it easier for the system by saying fewer words. That's actually like wrong. And I think as people understand that the more they speak, the language model kicks in, disambiguates what you said so that in the end, you actually know what you actually get a better subscription if you speak for longer in a more natural way. That's another reason why we like to make these conversations really very human. But yeah, I think that if the system works well, like our mantra has never been to trick people into thinking that
right.
It's a human, it's to help them forget that they're speaking with a machine. And we always have full disclosures. You ask, we'll tell you, right? We do not try to deceive you.
Right. And there's a lot of times there's regulatory requirements that would mandate that we say something up front, depending on the region.
There are or whatever. No, this is my pet peeve. At the moment, there aren't really strict, explicit legal requirements anywhere around doing this.
Oh, really?
Best to my knowledge, legislation changes quickly these days. But a lot of people interpret legislation as they have to say it. And when they don't, we recommend to people that they make it part of that recorded message in a different voice. Because the more you draw the attention to the fact that it's automated, the more you invoke that legacy feeling of people think of all the times that they tried and failed to use a voice assistant. And they're then
right. So they've given up at the front.
Yeah, yeah. They just like go nuts. Great video on our channel. People were like losing their mind when they hear it's automated. We love listening. Honestly.
Check that out after this episode.
We should link it in. It's probably one of the most viewed videos we have. But you want people to not think about it. You don't want necessarily to trick them, but you just want to
right.
get them away from that legacy cachet of bad experiences that mean that they won't engage and give you a shot. And, you know, on the percentage of people who know or don't know, we don't obsess over it. My intuition says that it's about a third. But we have a pretty strong bias towards not kicking up a fuss at the start. Because it's kind of like saying, hey, here's a TV remote. You turn it on by pressing this red button. The more instructions you give, the more people just in their mind believe that it's not going to work.
And also probably more inclined to push the red button.
Yeah.
We obviously have a stance on this that says if you do disclose that upfront, it taps into the predilections or the predispositions that people have toward automated systems. And they don't even feel the need to give them a chance, right?
Got but, it.
Do you think ultimately, as these bots become more and more human-like in various channels, do you think that that transparency is ultimately going to be necessary to maintain or to build that sense of trust? Or do you think that we are moving to a seamless human-like experience that's going to be expected? And so it doesn't really matter to the caller ultimately.
I think for better or worse, legislation is moving towards a need to, as you've had, I think the FTC recently, then like telemarketing robocalling altogether.
Sure. Yeah.
The AI Act has other provisions that will apply. My dream is to have a different ringtone that will tell you that the experience is starting in an automated way. I don't know if you've noticed, like when you dial into, I think, Google Meets and something's being recorded, I think they might have added the sentence that reads it out at the start. But what I always really liked is just the kind of like flashing red dot that tells you this is being recorded. You make it obvious and on your join and the cognitive load of realizing that is not high, but it's instant and obvious. I think that's a good way. So we had a different ringtone. And we've done this in a few deployments where we have a different ringtone. That's my dream for how this whole thing should work.
It's easily identifiable. It's a ringtone that we all know. We have a selection of ringtones on our own cell phone. We pick one that's our personality. This is something that not only indicates to the caller, hey, you're about to have a non-human experience, let's just call it that way. But yeah. That it's also, it could be branded and attached to that experience. I think that's a really cool concept and a very plausible future state.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the other side. Let's talk about the non-business application of humanization within AI. I don't know if you're familiar, but obviously with the critical mass adopting LLMs coming from OpenAI through ChatGPT, getting their experience, getting used to what this new incredible tool and resource is about. And then instantly trying to break it and do what teenagers and 20-somethings do, which is turn it raunchy. And so there's been a few iterations of what's being referred to as the Dan jailbreak, which is essentially just a string of prompts that has been iterated a number of times because every time whoever's putting these things together on Reddit, it builds a better Dan, then OpenAI comes in and shuts it down. So then they got to build a better Dan and so on and so forth. But essentially, it removes all the safeguards in a ChatGPT experience and gets it to pull no punches. So all the guardrails are off. It incites violence. It's racist. It's vulgar. It's self-deprecating, etc. And of course, something like this happens and a bunch of TikTokers are essentially chronicling themselves, developing these parasocial relationships, these feelings for this bot now, because it's the ultimate in human, right? It doesn't have those safeguards in place. That, of course, gives rise to the anti-Dan movement saying, robots should be robots and people should be people and never the twain shall meet. So if LLMs eventually get so good at, without these jailbreaks, mimicking the emotionality of human conversation and human interaction, is this going to lead to ultimately a lot of misunderstandings and manipulated feelings and interactions? Or do you think it's going to go the other way, which is actually builds a more just influential and a more skilled human interaction? For example, there was a recent study from the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology that showed that essentially through a chronicle of experiments, that AI was essentially a better debater than most people, just because one, it had access to facts, and two, the way that it assembled it and portrayed it embodied those formerly non-robotic or non-automated characteristics, the empathy, the charisma, and so forth. As Michelle would say, the riz. So where do you think the direction is going as the emotionality is captured?
You're pulling out a few threads here. I don't know. I think that apropos debating, it's obvious that it should be better, right? If you and I debated and after you had a go, I had 12 hours to think about a good response, I'd probably be a much better version of myself than if I just had to go straight after you, right? And you and I were evenly matched, and then I had those 12 hours to prepare every single one, I'd probably win every time because I have way more time to think, right? And war game and plan, right? So an AI has that, right? And it's because you have knowledge, facts, and everything. It's absorbed all of human knowledge, right? So it can come up with an argument. It might have seen an argument being made already. It's got all decades, but probably millennia of debating experience through the data it consumed. So yeah, you're in a bit of a pickle if you really have to win, right?
But that sort of thing, when you're talking, the way that you're referring to it, I don't see that as being as much debate as it is like a trivia contest, right? You're not going to beat an encyclopedia trivia. Just it has more information than you most likely. And like you said, the access and the capability of accumulating that, synthesizing the proper output, it's never been where it is today. But that's not what wins debates. What wins debates is that ability to influence. And now we're seeing examples, scientific studies of AI having those typically human characteristics of, again, like boisterousness, lack of ego, and they're able to carry that forward to tap into the human thing of human judges, which in the course in this experiment, it was graded by humans who was influenced by what means. So where do you think that plays in the ultimate scheme of things?
I mean, I think it's interesting, right? Obviously, that was done over text. So it's losing.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of the charm of real debates where if you and I are talking, there's a lot of comedy, the charisma, me twisting your words, you twisting mine and stuff. There's a lot of rhetoric. I've done a bit of debating when I was in high school, and I would constantly, I'd constantly get disqualified because I was way too much. And I've probably just actually dissecting arguments and stuff. Audiences loved me because provided entertainment, but I really think even in a debate, it really depends on how you set the scene, what's allowed, what's not. Is it being judged by judges or instructed to ignore the kind of gimmicks that someone like me would pull versus genuinely looking at the arguments? It sounds like the way that test was that it was much more about the arguments, where I think that cognitive knowledge and stuff that I mentioned matters quite a bit, right? Because maybe you carry the audience with your intellect and your references and ability to provide a good example that you just know because you're more, right? I think in terms of emotionality, we, had an interesting example with one of our clients where about 12% of the calls had to do with bereavement, inheritance, people talking about losing a loved one. And we built a sub experience where the tone really changes. It's very empathetic, takes you through the whole conversation very calmly, with a very somber voice all the way through. It's not just temporarily where you say that you've lost a loved one, but all the way to the end, very patient, slower, methodical. Right. The CSAT score we got was higher than a human agent on a comparable task. And that was also partially to do with the fact that in those vulnerable states, I think people actually prefer to speak to a non-human, right? Because that vulnerability and exposure, just the reliving whole ordeal, it hits you, I think, a bit less when you don't have that emotional reaction to the person, but the thing you're talking to is, in fact, automated. I think there's quite a few studies as well of this being the preferred model for things like STDs for people where people might have shame associated with talking.
Right. I don't want to talk to a person, actually. I want to talk to a robot because
it's a whole new level of anonymity, right? And avoiding embarrassment. So it's, I think it's a pretty powerful thing to do. So look, if you can't tell if something's human or not, right? If it's fully unhinged and, you know, trying to be as human as possible, well, what is a human? Right? Who is a human?
Right.
How do we judge that?
I know a lot of robotic people, that's for sure. So,
for sure. And I think in that case, well, it's a brave new world, right? Will people form emotional connections, friendships, love interests? Probably, right? And probably see that much sooner rather than later, right? And I think while OpenAI is not in the business of doing that, there are people who will be in that business because they think it's potentially very lucrative. And I think it's also useful for providing companionship, maybe for older people, for all sorts of uses that are actually really, really good, right?
So, and that's not new. Technology, I think, has always been really good at creating comfort and physically distancing people from things or other people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's since the dawn of time, a lot of significant communication technological advances have been at the expense of physical proximity, whether it's COVID, like normalizing working from home and having distance and instead of me seeing you in the office, I'm seeing you through a screen and that's become my norm. It's your 2D presentation. And so when I do see you in person, it's really weird.
Yeah.
To something like this. And even instances like Spike Jones movie, which I think is coming up on being more than a decade old at this stage with her, where a person forms a really strong bond with their voice assistant. Do you anticipate that people are going to become so comfortable, as we've noticed with this particular use case with this customer, that they become so comfortable with talking to automated systems that even beyond the hardships or the emotionally sensitive or maybe shame-inducing conversations, they're going to become addicted to talking to bots in general, and that's the only way that they're going to want to interact?
Well, no, I think that's a bit extreme, right? I think that, like, variety is the spice of life, so people probably do both. Most men form an emotional connection to their cars, right? They care about them great. That's like technology that you just becomes part of your life and you love it, right? So like if you had an assistant that actually carried state, knew a lot about you, helped you and stuff, then it's a sidekick, right? So why wouldn't you like enjoy its company? The fact it's just part of you, right? Like it's another loved para-human experience that you live with. So yeah, I don't know. I think, look, it's coming. It's coming fast. Right? We just get it to, you see like Sam Altman and like discussions maybe about an OpenAI, a ChatGPT button on a phone or something like that. That's a hard like form to get right. And I remember when I worked at Apple and I would tell people that I work on Siri, a lot of them would just like, start telling me how terrible it was being the debater that I am.
All right. Speaking of awkward human interactions.
Honestly, I'm like, yo, I just met you. Like, are you deliberately pushing a fighter or?
Could you pass the salt, please?
What's going on? And the truth is, it wasn't really meant as a provocation. It was just like, they felt that way. And I was like, but what is it not doing you want it to do? And that's where people go, well, that doesn't work. I was like, well, what do you want it to do?
Yeah, they don't have a specific answer.
Very early, because if you're setting an alarm, if you're putting in an event, your calendar, if you're calling someone, if you're sending a text message, sure, something might be misspelled. But those people that enjoy using it that way, they use it and that's fine. They're used to the fact that something could be misinscribed and no problem at all. So I think it was just really like the expectation that it should be doing a lot more. That was working against the perception of Siri as like a functional tool, because a functional tool it is, but ranked against the future promise of what a voice assistant should be, then it fell short. People wanted something that could do anything. And yeah, we're not there yet.
But we're not there yet. But even those behemoths behind some of the first consumer voice assistants, that the brands that entrance, that neophytes to the whole space of having interactions with AI, that's their foundation model, right? It's talking to Siri, it's talking to Alexa, it's talking to Google Home or whatever the 17 different names that Google applied to their various assistants. Yep. So do you think, and you mentioned this a little bit, and I'm wondering, like, ultimately looking further down the road, legislation, like you said, plays a huge part in this. And I think a bit of the party pooper, right? the idea of humanizing technology too much is scary to legislators because they know the legal sort of ramifications and something like that can have down the road. And of course, the nefarious usage. Do you think as a society, though, we will hit a point where we decide, you know what, maybe we shouldn't make these things very human. Maybe that's not the end goal and just collectively try and walk back that progress? Or do you think we're on a steadfast mission to make it as human-like as possible?
I think there are ways and places where it's beneficial for it to be human-like and places where it shouldn't be. And I think like the best products will win each of those categories, right? Wanting to legislate for the sake of legislation. Brussels, looking at you.
They'll do what they'll do, right?
And they'll over-legislate or they won't legislate enough. I am much more comfortable with the Anglo-American approach, like follow the common law, see the really bad uses, problematic ones, and then act against them versus try to preemptively solve now that this technology is in flux. I think that in the UK, Number 10 has organized quite a few events where they solicited these opinions. And I think that their overall attitude of, we don't really know how to regulate this, we shouldn't do it just yet, is one of the healthier ones. And I think America's on the same page as well. I think the EU is a bit more heavy-handed, which again, won't help them become more competitive. They're still like a distant number three behind this like US, white bloc, or China. I think there are places, there are uses for human-like things that will be great products and we shouldn't stand in the way. This should not be used to con people out of money or something like that. But I think the ballot just...
That's what humans are for.
Exactly. That's what salespeople work for, right? but yeah, exactly. No, it's... We'll see. It's going to be really hard to legislate against all this because the tooling is so widely available, right? And especially right. with the open source community, if you look at like Mistral and stuff, I think my co-founder is successfully... managed to get instructions on how to like pack a Serbian guy into two fridges, right? And it only took a bit of nudging to get instructions on how to like.
Yeah. Was that a veiled threat delivered to you? Hey, I know how to. I use Mistral to figure out how to pack a Serbian guy into two fridges.
You should ask Sean. He did it, and he did it successfully. So I guess he's one of the jailbreakers. I just think that one's a bit easier to jailbreak. But the tools, right.
tools. And Sean Wen, CTO and chief hacker here at PolyAI, by the way.
That's right. But look, I think people will jailbreak these things. And inevitably, then as it gets more commoditized, you will have things that you'll be able to use to have pseudo access. Like when did hackers ever not want full access to the technology they're using, right?
Right.
And then what they'll build on top, there will be some amazing things, some terrible things. And then once that emerges, we can regulate and see what happens. I don't think that preemptively legislating against it will do anything because we don't really know what's likely to emerge just yet. And again, like policing for it, it's going to be really difficult, right?
And so, and just as we all know, the pace of legislation is, it can't rival where this is going and the quickness with which it's getting there. So
that's right.
Excellent. Well, I think that's all we have time for today. Really appreciate you chatting with me today, Nicola. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day and we'll catch you next week.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.